Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in New York City and earned a BS degree in computer science and business, a master's degree in counseling/theology, and a doctorate in family systems. After holding various senior leadership roles for 15 years with Merrill Lynch, he founded Legacy Capitals, LLC in 2011. The author of Legacy, The Hidden Keys to Optimizing Your Family Wealth Decision, his name, Dr. Richard Orlando. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the founder and CEO of Legacy Capitals, LLC, Dr. Richard Orlando. Richard, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack, and thank you for this opportunity.
Can we start by you talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Thank you for this opportunity. Yes, I had a chance to live in New York City for almost 30 years of my life in the New York boroughs. My parents and really my grandparents were immigrants from Italy. And so with my parents, we had a chance to see the journey of an immigrant family go from not a whole lot to a good working class lifestyle where the values of hard work, personal responsibility, and a little faith goes a long way. So my dad, among his family members, he was one of nine children. My mother was one of six children. My dad's path was slightly different than his siblings, which took on more of a path of blue-collar work, where for some reason my dad's path led him into getting a master's and being a professor and having his own company in the field of transportation. And my mom has her PhD in raising our family. So I have two siblings, a brother and a sister. And those years in New York City were foundational to who I am today. And not only do my mom and dad, and still do, my mom and dad still play a very important role in who they are in our lives, but coming from a very large extended family who we're all still close to, although many have passed at this point, the nature of family in many ways has been foundational to who I am and then ultimately the work that we're involved in Legacy Capitals.
The breadth and width of your various degrees is amazing. Computer science, business, counseling, theology, family systems. You got more degrees than many of us have read books. Why so many degrees and so diverse?
That's a very good question, Jack. When I look back, and that's really the way to extract wisdom or lessons learned, it's fascinating. It wasn't something that I had considered. I wasn't one of those young boys saying, I'm going to pursue this and go after these three degrees. I was, in many ways, going one step at a time, always moving forward. But the reason why I started with computer science was I thought that was a good field to go into. I had considered psychology before going into college, but I thought, that's too much schooling. And now looking back, I ended up going quite a bit of schooling. But the computer science degree took me to Wall Street, working for Drexel Burnham. And it was a fascinating experience and journey where I made a few bucks as a young person and was a computer jock at the time. But then that company, for many who know that company, they made some mistakes and were charged with insider trading, and they went Chapter 11, which led me to the next big decision, which is now what do I do? I have a few bucks in the bank. I'm still a young man. And I ultimately decided, for personal reasons, to go study theology and for counseling for a professional path, which is interesting now as we look back that psychology interest, that counseling interest, emerged again 6 or so years after college. undergraduate college. So that's what sent me down that path of studying theology for my own spiritual and faith journey, but the counseling degree for eventual work. Once that ball got rolling, I decided to go on for the PhD in family systems, which ties back to what I was mentioning earlier about my family heritage. It was embedded into me, both in word and in deed, the importance of family, and especially in my case, a very large extended family. And I chose to study family systems and pursued my PhD in family systems. So looking back, it all has come together. I think that's one of the things I love about the name of your show, Anything is Possible. I wasn't smart enough to put those pieces together, but I did, looking back, continue to move forward and trust that the process and trust that God would tie things together, and that's where we are today.
You had a very successful chapter with an iconic business name on Wall Street, the firm Merrill Lynch. Tell us about Merrill Lynch.
Yeah, when I was finishing up my PhD coursework, I at the time I was also doing some sports psychology with the athletes at the university where I was doing my PhD, and I had interned and brought in the New York Giants to help us do train us to do some of the sports psychology with the athletes. And at that point, with the sports psychology, pretty much finishing off all my coursework, I started to consider going back to financial services. And at that time, I was looking in the employment section of the New York Times, and they had this position inside of Merrill Lynch to be part of this internal consulting and training group at Merrill Lynch. Make a long story short, I applied, got the position, and in 1997, joined Merrill Lynch. And the group inside of Merrill Lynch's primary focus was to help the financial advisor or the private wealth advisor successfully grow and run their businesses and add value to their clients. I had a chance to run that group for about 15 years, and our team, we did this work for Merrill Lynch and inside of Merrill Lynch throughout the world. We did it in Asia, throughout in Europe, and other countries. And it was an amazing, amazing experience. While at Merrill Lynch, one of the executives in the private bank knew of my formal education and my other life experiences, referring to my PhD in family psychology, my dissertation research on family businesses, and my counseling background, and said to me, "Why aren't you serving our financially successful client, our families?" And so that led me down a parallel path of running this internal consulting and training group, and then getting a chance to work alongside the advisors, the trusted advisors who have earned the right to serve these families and manage their wealth. But I was able to then also help the family prepare themselves for their wealth. So I was able to do that inside of Merrill Lynch at the same time as running that consulting group. And those experiences of going around the world for Merrill and serving trusted advisors all over the globe and serving very financially successful families was very enriching, no pun intended, and very fulfilling to be able to help them navigate their big decisions as a family in the context of wealth. And I learned a lot, and I continue to learn a lot from serving our clients, which are in many cases, leaders in their industries or leaders in their communities. And it's very inspirational to see what's possible in their lives as well.
We're talking to Dr. Richard Orlando, and in 2011, he founded Legacy Capitals, LLC. And also 2011, he wrote a book entitled Legacy. When we come back, we're going to ask him about those things. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. Richard Orlando. 2011, he wrote the book Legacy, The Hidden Keys to Optimizing Your Family Wealth Decisions. Richard, you say in the foreword of the book, your legacy is how you live not just what you leave. Talk about our legacy.
Jack, we're very passionate about, and it's why I wrote what I did in this book, Legacy, is that I think too often the limited understanding of legacy, which conventionally means what are we leaving behind, really short-circuits what's possible in our lives and in our children's lives and future generations' lives. So what we mean and what I deeply believe is that our legacies are really about how we're living. When we're no longer here, all that we have lived is just put on hold or kind of cemented in. So it's so much more important to think about our legacies is what are we doing every day to encourage others, bless others, maximize our opportunity, live our purposes, and raise children so that they, too, will do the same and inspire others and in fact, reach whatever's possible for each of their lives. So very passionate about legacy is really about how we live and less about what happens only when we pass.
Chapter 1 is entitled Navigating Your Legacy. You start with a quote from Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, quote, "We are not human beings on a spiritual journey. We are spiritual beings on a human journey." And you talk a lot about spiritual capital. What's spiritual capital?
Jack, this was one of those chapters, as I look back, that I didn't realize was going to manifest in the way it did in the book. And the reason why I say that was working inside of financial services for many years, this idea of bringing a topic of spiritual capital into that equation took a little courage. Not a lot of courage, but a little courage to put that out there. And so here's what I attempted to do, and I very much believe more and more every day, that quote, which is that we're really spiritual beings on a human journey. In other words, there are greater purposes. There are greater things happening beyond the obvious. So spiritual capital was an attempt to, and this is a bit ironic or paradoxical, kind of operationalize this intangible. And I drew a parallel or an analogy to spiritual capital as being our own personal GPSs. What ultimately is navigating us? And so I attempted to do that by creating an equation for spiritual capital. By the way, spiritual capital being the foundational anchor or capital to all our other capitals, such as financial, intellectual, social, and human. But the equation is our purpose plus our values times our faith, whatever that may be. And so I believe if individuals and families, especially those who are financially successful, focused more on that in the context of their financial capital, it'll help them stay close to what's most important to them and ultimately live the legacies that they really want to live.
Chapter 3 is the pursuit of happiness. For many people, they equate money to happiness. In the Bible, the Gospel Mark, chapter 10, verse 25, Richard, quote, "It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who was rich to enter the kingdom of heaven." What was Jesus telling us with that passage?
What I think, with especially with a scripture like that and a number of others that are commonly referred to, I think it's a matter of priority and perspective. So what I mean by that is I think in that case, the eye of a needle, as I understand it, was actually a gateway or a door by which people travel through with their camels, and it was small in stature so that anything extra on the person and the camel would not be able to fit through. Similar to that verse, as I think about your question, there's another scripture that says it's the love of money that's the root of all evil. So I think what they're suggesting to us, I think what Jesus's model and wisdom and guidance for us is that money is a tool to be used to serve others and our families as well. But when we make it the focus, or we begin to serve mammon or fall in love with money, I think we're only going to hurt ourselves and potentially others. We will lose that beautiful journey of being spiritual beings on a human journey and really limit what's possible by we really become humans focusing on material things that are not meant to serve that purpose in our lives, which is why I wrote that chapter on happiness.
We're talking to Dr. Richard Orlando. If you want to learn more, www.legacycapitals.com. Richard, at what age should we begin to teach our children about money and finances? And most importantly, how do we do it?
Jack, it's very common that I'm asked, when do we start talking about our wealth or our money with our children or grandchildren? And I always say, you've already been communicating about your wealth by the decisions you've made, the purchases you've made, the context that they're growing up in. So I reframe the question and say, okay, now what do we want to verbalize intentionally to whomever you're trying to communicate this question about money? So some of our guidelines are such that we should be talking about the topic of money in age-appropriate ways from kindergarten upwards, when there are books and resources and online games which help raise the financial IQ of children, teens, tweens, adults, and so on. There's plenty there. So that we should always be educating the next generations on. But the actual conversation around what is our family's net worth, or what is mine or my spouse's income, those questions and answers for 99% of the families we serve is meant to come later. In other words, let's move towards transparency of raising the financial education of our children and grandchildren. And then there's moments in the life cycle, whether it's marriage, potentially assets becoming available through an estate plan to any set of children or grandchildren, there are going to be moments or investment into businesses where, speaking more specifically at that time around the financial assets of the family, or if there's a loan from the family banks are sometimes referred to, those would be other times to talk more specifically or move towards transparency and unfolding the conversation with whoever's involved in that in the family.
We're talking to Dr. Richard Orlando, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula, and we're with Dr. Richard Orlando, the author of Legacy, The Hidden Keys to Optimizing Your Family Wealth Decisions. You did a white paper recently, and in that white paper, you say this: family offices may be familiar with the Chinese proverb, wealth does not pass three generations. Shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations is the American equivalent. And the same phenomenon is found throughout the world. In England, they say clogs to clogs in three generations. In Italy, it's from the stables to the stars to the stables in three generations. Explain, please.
Jack, this is an important dynamic and reason for the work that Legacy and Capitals and others are involved in, which is that the generation who creates the wealth, especially the significant amount of wealth, is what's considered sometimes generation one. The subsequent two generations who get further away from that wealth creation generation tends to, statistically, are they're not prepared for the responsibility of that wealth, or those companies that represent the family wealth, or they're making bad decisions. But ultimately what happens over three generations is the wealth is dissipated and lost for the family. And we're not talking about in this case that there wasn't enough wealth to survive three generations. We're talking about families where there's enough wealth to survive, but sadly, and too often, it does not. And that's really what I like to say is the technical answer or technical definition of shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves. But what I want to also add to this proverb is what I'll call the kitchen table conversations that we're having with the wealth creators, the wealth holders, the entrepreneurs, the founders, the executives, where they're sitting with us and saying, what really is keeping them up at night is how do they not have their wealth unintentionally create entitled or spoiled children? Well, how do we transfer our values, not just our valuables? And topics like you've already brought up with me, and it's why they're covered in the book, they would say things like, how do we keep our middle-class values, but yet we have all this wealth? And how do we talk about this, and when do we talk about it? So this is what was really behind the work of preparing the family for their assets and helping them communicate and prepare subsequent generations for both the blessings, benefits, and burdens of wealth.
Some facts. $41 trillion, are being passed down to the next generation by 2052. 90% of the family's wealth does not make it past the third generation. And 80 to 90% of heirs reject their parents' advisors soon after receiving their inheritance. In that same white paper entitled Preparing for the Assets, you talk about the why. And you refer to Simon Sinek, who says, he's got a speech on TED entitled, How Great Leaders Inspire Action. And you say that most great leaders focus on the what and the how, but the truly great ones focus on the why. What's the difference?
Yeah, and this is, I think, looking back, one of the benefits I bring and my team brings to our clients is that we do come out of the business world, many of us, as well as now have our own company in Legacy Capitals. And there's a lot of wisdom that is found in, for example, what you quoted and I wrote in that article, someone like Simon Sinek, who does a lot of work on leadership, is that it's very important for families. And this is really where the spiritual capital concept comes in, which is the bigger existential questions is who are we, why do we exist, what's our purpose? These are the why questions. The what and how are important, but without getting to the why, what is what we're trying to accomplish is an important question to ask, but why? Why is that important to us? Who are we, and what do we believe our legacies should be? So in that article you're referring to, that's what I talk about for family offices and for families themselves, which is helping their families ask those questions and answer them so, in fact, they can inspire what's possible in generations to come and prepare them accordingly, because with that foundation will allow them to be more successful in the actual guidance of the financial assets of the family.
If you want to learn more, www.legacycapitals.com. Chapter 5, Richard, Next Generation Preparation. You talk about building bridges, i.e. handling conflict, amongst the family, embrace conflict. That's tough to do. How do I do it?
Yeah, we do. We actually work with families. We call it building bridges because it is inevitable. It's inevitable when you have different generations represented in a meeting or sharing an asset at some point or transferring assets at some point or just different personality styles. It's inevitable. Bridges need to be built. Understanding needs to be had. Insights need to be gained by listening, by influencing, by educating one another. So we don't see conflict automatically as a problem. We see it as part of the process to work through. In essence, how do we get through and navigate these differences, which is what that chapter and others are about. So what we make a distinction is that there's constructive conflict, like how do we wrestle through this where we're not automatically seeing eye to eye on something versus destructive conflict. So destructive conflict ultimately means that it's bringing something to a halt. It's having a negative impact. It's not allowing the family to flourish, the decisions to be made, the business to continue to succeed, or the wealth to successfully transfer across the generations. We call it building bridges, and we guide our families through a process of building those bridges.
We're talking to Richard Orlando, the author of Legacy, The Hidden Keys to Optimizing Your Family Wealth Decisions. You believe that we should have a family meeting at least once annually with multiple generations in the meeting. What are the keys to a successful family meeting?
Yeah, there's a few that we believe are foundational to designing a successful multi-generational family meeting. And we do believe at least annually each family builds that ritual or practice into their culture. Again, drawing a parallel from successful businesses, it would be hard to imagine that a successful business and the C-suite are not having some kind of quarterly meeting, board meetings, strategic meetings to guide the company. Well, it's no different for families. They might not be a corporate entity, although some will have that as part of their financial portfolio, but they still have a family of assets, human and otherwise, human capital and otherwise. So the foundational pieces in those meetings, such for example, are that to the degree we can have the agenda of those meetings represent as many of the topics relevant to the family members as possible, then we have buy-in for that meeting. So a clear agenda representing the items relevant to the family are intact. In some cases, having a third party guide, facilitate, and lead that meeting will help the family move through the process, especially early on in their process. One of the families we've been serving, we've been doing family meetings with them for 15 years now, and we also have filmed TV shows, and a couple of those family members have been in our TV shows where they talk about the benefit of those family meetings, enabling them early in the process to have conversations that are not always easy to have within families, let alone all the other learning that's come out of it and the integration of spouses. And going back to what you asked me earlier, when and how do we talk about this topic in the context of who we are as a family and our intended legacies?
We're talking to Dr. Richard Orlando, and I quote him again, "Each generation should see themselves as a first generation." Easy to say, hard to do. When we come back, we'll ask him, how do you do it? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the founder and CEO of Legacy Capitals LLC, Dr. Richard Orlando. A while ago, Richard, we had a man on, Dr. Joe White, who's worked with kids in Missouri summer camps for 40 years. And he made the statement to me that parents today, in the mistaken name of love, try to prevent the kids from experiencing the very things that made the parents who they are. So when you've got money, it's so easy to have these kids be entitled, et cetera, et cetera. And you make this statement, each generation should see themselves as a first generation. How do you do that?
Yeah, and one of the other things I say is to parents, do we love our children enough not to give them everything we can? So what you're talking about there is how do we allow our children to have their own journeys, to make their mistakes, to learn from experiences that cause resilience and grit in us. So these are what we call at Legacy Capitals really their life IQ, which is ultimately what allows them to flourish in life, not the money. The money is a great icing on the cake when put in its proper perspective. But the life IQ is what we're talking about here, and that's a lot of what I talk about in my book. So whether it's grit, resilience, I wrote an article called Help Your Children Fail, These aren't easy things to do for loving family, for love as loving parents, but they are the very things we need to do to help our children flourish in life. The quote you've referenced in my book, I really use speaking to the subsequent generations of the wealth creators. And maybe the subsequent generations are wealth creators in and of themselves, but the idea of having a first-generation mindset is really a concept I took from my sports psychology training, which is based on how we think about our game and our performance could influence our outcomes. So here's the distinction. Some next-generation adults might be thinking, how do I live off of or take care of someone else's assets that are being transferred to me versus, hey, my starting point is further down the food chain or higher up than my father's, mother's, or grandparents was, but I'm still a first-generation person with this new set of assets. How do I maximize this? How do I do what's possible with this? That's a different starting point.
We just heard this man say, and I quote, do we love our children enough to not give them everything we can? If you want to learn more, www.legacycapitals.com. Richard Orlando, you use a phrase, giving warriors. What does that mean?
Giving warriors, I think, really connotes the idea of how do we, each as individuals, but also as families, give back through our time, talent, and treasures. The happiness chapter in my book references some of the research on what contributes to a meaningful, fulfilling, happy life. And one of those attributes is having your life contribute to something larger than yourself and sharing with others. This is commonly referred to in the financial worlds or legal worlds as philanthropy. As many of us know, philanthropy literally means the love and what of others, the welfare of others. It doesn't say writing a check. Now, obviously, writing a check sometimes is a great way to show love to others. But in families, not everyone has money or owns money to contribute. So usually it's the wealth holder, the wealth creators are due, or some families could be very philanthropic, as I talk about in my book, but maybe have little financial assets because they're able to give their time and talent and love. You may remember the parable in the New Testament where a woman gave one or two coins and someone else gave many more coins, but Jesus says she gave more because in proportion to what she had, there was more of a, using your question, a giving warrior in her, a more generous person.
Following up on that, the woman with just a couple coins, there's a family listening tonight and they say, Richard, our family isn't very wealthy. Therefore, we don't have to worry about a legacy, etc. What do you say?
Jack, thank you for posing that question because I think that's such a, in the industry of legacy and legacy planning, it really disturbs me when they say they equate legacy families with financial families. I just think that's such a mistake. And that absolutely limits what's possible. Every individual and family is living and will ultimately leave a legacy. And it's really that part of us, that spiritual journey, man and woman in us, that really can have a very powerful impact on others by how we tap into our spiritual guidance and live our legacies in a way that will inspire others to live. And where possible, giving of our time, talents, and our couple of coins to benefit others.
You refer to perspective keeper. What does that mean?
Yeah, this goes to really how do we, in the context of our financial wealth, not be ashamed of it or try to disguise it, but how do we keep perspective in it? I've had so many conversations with parents, and they'll say things like, my kids go to school, and their friends and other students will come with very luxurious cars to school, or their homes are so big, and we go on family vacations, and sometimes we fly in private jets. How do we keep perspective? And I did a video just on that topic alone, which is that's part of our role as parents is to be a perspective keeper. but it has to be according to our values. And in many cases, the families will say, although we have this financial wealth, we're losing perspective, or I don't want to have my kids lose perspective. And I used a real example of, let's say you're going on vacation each year, and right now your family has only gone on vacation to very luxurious experiences, you know, locations, because you want to enjoy your hard labor and the financial benefits of doing so. But your kids or your grandchildren assume that's the normal. Well, how about you plan a vacation each year where you have a very, very, very limited budget? And now as a family, you have to come together and say what experience we want to create with this limited budget. There's a lot of opportunities like that, especially in giving back to those who are less financially, who have less financial resources. That's another great way to keep perspective, that not everyone might have the financial resources you or I have, but and therefore helping us keep the perspective of being grateful for what we do have, not ashamed of it, but also being willing to share it and bless others with it.
Dr. Richard Orlando, as our time winds down together this night, what final thoughts do you give us, please?
Jack, whether it's someone with a lot of financial resources or, for example, those with less financial resources, such as a ministry I'm part of that's in New York City called Urban Hope, which focuses on bringing hope to the youth in the inner cities, both require this understanding that we're on a spiritual journey and that there's bumps in the road, but we're all intent. We all have a purpose and we're all of value. And that's why I was so glad when you asked me to do this show that things are possible, because sometimes the money could even blur us because it limits us. It gives us too much comfort. Or maybe it's when you're in the inner city, you're looking for your next meal, and we need to help people get that minimum level of their basic needs met. But past that, we're all on the same journey, and helping families and individuals navigate those journeys according to their values and their purpose and their calling is a very worthwhile work.
Richard Orlando, I commend you for what you do, how you do it, and most importantly, this is a mission to you, the why you do it. It's a spiritual journey. Please keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.